Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
What's up, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Straight Up Sabres, presented by the Hockey Podcast Network and the Charging Buffalo. As always, I'm Brendan.
And I'm Taylor.
And Taylor, there is much to talk about today, from the start of the West Coast road trip to the current playoff picture to the Sabres making a pretty important hire upstairs. But let's start off with the Sabres West Coast road trip, as they started off good, not great. Probably not even that good, you can really say, as they ended up picking up a really nice 6-2 victory over the Seattle Kraken, picking up their first win in franchise history against the Kraken. And then, unfortunately, on the second half of a back-to-back, which saw Devin Levi get his first start since the end of January, the Sabres fell 3-2 to the high-powered Vancouver Canucks offense. The Vancouver game was a particularly tough one there, as the Sabres, through the first two periods, were outshot 25-10. Levi held strong and helped keep them in the game. Rasmus Dahlin ended up having two goals in this one, and the Sabres came on strong down the stretch, but unfortunately, it was not enough. So, Taylor, this obviously puts the Sabres in a really tough position here. We were saying on our Monday episode, or Tuesday episode, I should say, that we really wanted to see them walk away from this trip with four wins. Unfortunately, now they're 1-1, which makes this game against Edmonton a literal must-win game. No scenario where they can lose, and they have any semblance of a hope of their playoff hopes continuing here. So before we get into the Edmonton game and previewing that a bit, let's talk about these two. As I mentioned before, nice win against Seattle, starting off the trip on Monday, and then falling to Vancouver on the second half of that back-to-back. What did you make of the Sabres' efforts through those two games?
Well, the Seattle one, for starters, we have to say, sorry, Jeff Skinner. We recorded a podcast like 4 hours before the game. Well, more than that. I don't know how many hours. A few hours before the game, where we were just like, what are we going to do with this guy's freaking contract in a few years? Then he goes out and gets a hat trick. So Jeff Skinner, I promise, if you keep scoring 30 goals every year, which it seems like you might still do this year, the Sabres will hold on to you, and we will not ask them to get rid of you.
Which is what we said, though.
That's true, yeah. Yeah, but, you know, good for him for making it seem really stupid to the people that were listening to the next day. Congrats to the Sabres on getting their first win in six tries against a team that's been under 500 total in its NHL run.
Sick.
But it's good to break that curse, if you want to call it a curse or whatever, break that bad streak against Seattle. That was a really good win. They looked impressive start to finish. I guess with the exception of the goal they gave up in the first 30 seconds.
Yeah, but they came right back.
Generally, like, yeah, and it's another game. It's been a weird year this year where they've had a lot of games. Not a lot of games, but of late, they've had games where they score like six. And I think they've done that three or four times recently. They only did it once. They scored, I think, nine against Toronto once in the first part of the season. It's an interesting little thing they do, because it makes them seem like it's going to be, oh, this is just like last year. And then they come out pretty flat like they did Tuesday night against Vancouver. That one, I mean, it's basically the opposite. Start to finish, bad game. And I know Vancouver has an awesome record. I don't look at them as some unbeatable powerhouse that should be dominating you. Even if you want to look at them as a really good team, which they are this year, that's not what they do. What they've done successfully is score on a high percentage of their shots and stop the other team scoring a high percentage of their shots. Thatcher Demko has been really good, and they shot a high percentage. They had a good power play. And even of late, they actually have been 500 over the past month or so. So they're not steamrolling teams. They're not being like, oh my God, how are we ever going to beat this team? Just dominating even the strength, dummying teams and bullying them. So that's, it's bad that the Sabres are that. I know it's a back-to-back on the West Coast. It's not the easiest game to play, but that's why you get paid the big bucks. So you can show up in those situations. At the very least, don't get embarrassed. And when your rookie goalie has a really solid game and keeps you in it, reward him. I just, when it was 2-0 going into the third, it was like midnight. I went to bet on that one because I was like, dollars to donuts, they're losing 2-1 or 3-1 with an empty net.
Yeah.
Lo and behold.
Well, I feel like off of that point, though, a good way to put it is that it's never a good thing if you're walking away from a game and the headlines are Casey DeSmith makes 15 saves as Vancouver beats the Sabres.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, that's a situation where you should be able to win that game. Like I just said, they've been 500 for like a month. One of the biggest and most important players from the season has been Thatcher Demko, who I think should be second in Vezina voting by the end of the year. Or at least he'll be a finalist, I hope, for the Vezina Trophy. He's been awesome. Casey DeSmith is just a guy. He's Fred from down at the store. You can score on him, but you can't score on him if you don't goddamn shoot. So yep. I can't even be like, wow, you got goalied again by an average guy. They didn't, because they couldn't take advantage of that at all, because Vancouver played defense on them like they were the 90s Devils.
Yep.
And that worked. I mean, that shouldn't work against a team like the Sabres. And that far too many times this year it has.
And also, we'd be remiss to not mention the fact that the Sabres' power play went 0-4 in this one. And unfortunately, is back to looking stagnant and stale and uninspired once again. And so you had made a point on Twitter, though, Taylor, that I think was a very good one. And the tweet read, barely an oversimplification to say that the Sabres play poorly in situations that require quality coaching or at least the creation of a coherent system. I think that applies to 5-on-5, but it definitely, even though their 5-on-5 scoring has been fine, it definitely applies to the power play. Like that, realistically, you can say whatever you want about personnel. And I know we've talked about the fact that it seems like there's some easy changes that they could make or should make throughout the season that they just weren't when it comes to personnel. But across both units, you have enough talent that you should know pretty comfortably that it's not about the guys that you have out there. It's a system thing. And you could see it clear as day that far too much of it, of what the power play is based on, is just telegraphing these setups to Tage. It really does. It's just you keep showing your hands and being very obvious that you're just trying to set him up for those one-timers on the half wall. And in reality, what's going to make the power play effective is if, and this is the case in any sport, it's the case in football or basketball or anything, that if you have secondary scoring threats, it opens up the rest of the game for your primary scoring threats, because people are going to just always know that, oh, well, they're just going to keep trying to set Tage up. This is their bread. This is like their money play. This is all the only thing that they get going. Whereas if you have other guys that are actual real scoring threats, shooting threats out there, and the power play isn't just based on force feeding it to Tage, and, you know, then you have whether it's Dylan Cousins or Paterka or Tuck, any of these guys are legitimate threats on the power play. That means then that these opposing teams, when they're defending, it's not going to be so heavily skewed towards, oh, we just need to stop Tage. It's that we have to stop these other guys too. Then that takes away some of the pressure and attention off of Tage, even though obviously, you know, he's a star player. So, of course, there's always going to be attention on him. But having those other threats, or even using Tage as like a decoy in a way, is what's going to make the power play a lot more effective rather than just trying to force feed it to him. And I just, again, I can't state it enough that like, it is just, it's so stagnant. They don't move. They just are standing around way too often out there. And one thing I'll also mention that I feel like, I don't know if we've talked about it, but I know our pal Kev NT Ryder has mentioned it a couple of times, that it's also very weird when it comes to deployment with the second unit. Have you been noticing this in games that like they take off the first unit too soon, or they start with the second unit?
It's basically the opposite of what they should be doing.
Right.
Because they have a terrible second unit. That's another head scratcher. I don't know what to make of that at all. what do they see that they like the second unit so much? Are they trying to give the first unit a breather? And that's ridiculous.
The hell if I know. I mean, what do you do here, though, Taylor? You know, you're 0 for 4 again. It seems like after the initial rush of Byram coming in and injecting some life into them, I don't know if it's them making Byram kind of play to their system more, and now that's why that it looks so stagnant, or I guess what it could be, like if they're just like too like comfortable. I don't even really know how to describe it. It just, I don't understand how you can just repeatedly roll out these units with the same tactics and making the same mistakes over and over again, and in no way, shape, or form trying to course correct. So what do you think? I mean, what is the answer here?
You ride it out and then just fire the coaching staff in the offseason and get in someone who knows how to run a power play. At this point, I have no idea. Like, in March 21st, can you install a new system that is totally goes against everything you've done all year?
Yeah,
I hope you can, but I don't know. I mean, you have less than a month of real time left in the season. You have 12 games. I think I have no idea what the answer is, honestly, at this point.
It shouldn't have taken this long for them to get to that point in the first place, too.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I mean, this is something that we all knew was a problem in November. Shit, a lot of people knew it was a problem last year. It wasn't as much of a problem, but they didn't look good when they weren't setting Tage up for one-timers.
Yep.
So it's been a long time coming, and there's no way you can roll in the next season with something like this. So my advice to them is get in that lab in the summer, figure it out, and or just hire someone who's run a successful power play before. But Brendan, before we get to the games upcoming, do we want to hear a word from our sponsors?
Quickly, can I give you a quick stat I want to get your thoughts on first before we hear that, just to kind of tie everything in that we're talking about here? So we've referenced him a couple of times on the pod, Aaron at 23 Sabres. Good follow on Twitter. Good integration of stats into a lot of their tweets. From the 20th, they tweeted Sabres stats in March. 43% expected goals, which ranks them 29 out of 32. 2.55 expected goals for 60, which ranks them 29 out of 32. And 3.38 expected goals against per 60, which ranks them 24th out of 32 teams. Then the Sabres have 8.08 goals scored above expected, which is ranked second in the NHL, and 7.32 goals saved above expected, which ranks sixth in the NHL. They have a plus 15 goal differential above expected and are still 5-5.
It's insane. I would say
it makes you want to rip your hair out. It really,
I don't
really
understand
does.
How that's possible. You know, it's really, they're basically the anti-Capitals.
And those are all situation stats. Go ahead though. Yeah. Anti-Capital. I hate this, but go on.
I mean, the Capitals have a negative 30-something goal differential, and they're in a playoff spot because they have an unbelievable record in one-goal games. And when they lose, pretty often they get smacked around. Like, once every 2 weeks, they lose a game that's like, oof. I think last night, Wednesday night, was a good example of that.
Yeah.
Against the Leafs. Whereas the Sabres, they have a game like the Kraken game, and then they turn around and they have, like, this brutal it's basically one-goal loss with an empty net goal at the end of it kind of game. They're not quite the opposite, because the opposite of the Capitals would be a better team than the Sabres, like a team with a plus 30 goal differential and was out of the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Sabres are hovering around zero, but it's a good example. They have lost a lot of close games. They've not been good in close games. And, you know, as we brought up earlier, they haven't been good situationally. But let's hear a word from our sponsors.
Let's do that.
We know hockey games move fast, but with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL, you can score faster than anything happening on the ice. This week, new customers can bet $5 and get 200 instantly in bonus bets. So, for example, Thursday night, tonight, when you're listening to this, hopefully, the Sabres, Oilers, well, they're taking on the Oilers there in Edmonton, and wow, DraftKings and Vegas generally like Edmonton's odds a lot better than the Sabres. They have the Sabres plus 190. The money line, Edmonton at minus 230. So Edmonton's heavily favored in this one. And honestly, we all know why. There's a very good reason for that. So if you want to fade Edmonton or bet on the Sabres or get in on the individual scores or anything like that, here's what you got to do. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app with code THPN for the Hockey Podcast Network. New customers can bet just $5 on the NHL and get 200 instantly in bonus bets. Only in DraftKings Sportsbook with code THPN. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY. Text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777. Visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus, age vary by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/hockey for eligibility, deposit restriction, terms, and responsible gaming resources. NHL and the NHL Shield are registered trademarks of the National Hockey League. Copyright NHL 2024. All rights reserved.
All right, folks.
Ziggy has joined me for this portion of the podcast, and he has a lot of takes on what the Sabres should do in their coaching search in the offseason, if there is one. Ziggy, what are your thoughts? No thoughts from Ziggy right now. He's going to withhold that till the season's over. So, obviously, Edmonton coming up on Thursday. Edmonton is like the – they have one of the weirdest seasons this year. They had one of the worst stretches a good team has ever had, a lot of it due to puck luck to start the season, got their coach fired. They come back, new coach, and they start rolling. And it's basically like – it's not just that they're scoring again. It seems like all their problems are solved. They're like the best team in the league for a few months. One of the best stretches I've ever seen. And then now they've kind of settled into being kind of meh. Kind of above meh. They're not quite meh. But like they had a meh stretch, and now it's kind of like, okay, now they're just the regular Oilers that we kind of expected. Still, though, that could be a Stanley Cup team. They, to me, seem pretty solidified to be second in the Pacific, which means they're going to have home ice advantage over either LA or Vegas. I'm thinking LA, honestly, the way things are going right now. Brendan, what are your thoughts on these fellas?
I mean, it's they have had such an interesting season. You know, you laid it out well there, and I think maybe it's an oversimplification, but I don't necessarily think it is that a team that has Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl on it, I'm going to consider them contenders no matter what. Some of the moves that they have made recently, like particularly like the Adam Henrique trade, for example, haven't really started to pay off quite yet. He's had a little bit of a slow start. I think he had his first goal last night with them. First goal in, I want to say, about five games or so, probably only, I think, 2 points in that time. But for me, it doesn't matter whether it's down the stretch, whether it's in the playoffs, whatever it may be. If you're going up against Connor McDavid, he is one of the very few players in the NHL that can single-handedly determine the outcome of a game on his own. And I mean, as far
asterisk,
as them being,
except against the Sabres,
except against the Sabres, that is true. So maybe they'll have his number tonight or Thursday night, right? Yeah. Thursday night. Excuse me.
Tonight. Yeah.
So tonight. Funny. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. I mean, I feel like in like the short term, in terms of tonight's game, like I'm hoping the Sabres, you know, coming off of a loss and understanding, again, just the fact that they can't afford to lose really anymore. You know, hopefully we'll see them in like coming out of the gates very strongly with a quick start. I think that's something that it really, it's interesting with them, because I want to say that like a lot of times their slow starts, well, I should say for the majority of the season, their slow starts have plagued them and hampered them and have kept them back, like, for sure in terms of games and competing, because they aren't able to like bounce back with teams in that way. But as we've also seen from time to time, like, look no further than the Seattle game where you get scored on early and then you are able to bounce back. But I think it's just as like a tone setting thing that they need to come out of the gate strong early against Edmonton, get an early lead going, and then just, you're going to have to score goals against this team. They're very, very dangerous with the puck on their stick in the offensive zone. We know this. We know the firepower that they have, and that they have some, not a lot, but they have some depth scoring, of course, beyond McDavid and Draisaitl. And so, and as a playoff threat, though, yeah, I mean, I feel like nobody should feel comfortable going against the Oilers in a playoff matchup just because of McDavid and what we've seen that he's capable of. How are you feeling going into this one?
Well, not great. There's been this weird thing that the Sabres have done really well against McDavid. He has his career lowest points per game against the Sabres. There's no real reason for that. So, you know, it could end at any time. I don't know if it's going to end right now, but it is. He has been extremely hot in terms of getting his assists for the past couple months. So I want to throw this out there. I'm going to try to do this going forward, if I remember. like a cool stat of the game for our upcoming opponents. Here's two related stats. McDavid has 82 assists right now. He's on pace to be the first player since Mario Lemieux to have 100 assists in a season. And there is a very, very short list of guys who have done that. Here's a related stat. Zach Hyman has 46 goals. He's third in the NHL in goals. I mean, that's pretty wild. So that's a fun little related stat.
Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
They're going to lose. It's my opinion on this. Because Skinner's playing well now. Their top lines are scoring. Like, they're not, you know, they have decent depth. I don't like how this looks for the Sabres, to be honest.
I mean, that's fair. At this stage of the game, I don't think I could blame anybody for feeling that way. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it just is really going to come down to how these guys are going to play in a true your backs are against the wall kind of moment. I think we all are mostly of the firm belief that they're not going to make it. They would need a miracle run and a ton of help around them to be able to sneak in at this stage of the game. But I'm just looking for how they're going to be out of the gates here. Like I said, this is truly as much of a back against your wall moment as this team has had this season. I think that how they look tonight is not only indicative of the team itself and their mindset, but I think it'll also be very indicative of Granato as well. And not that if they come out of the gates strong and they end up getting a win, do I think that that absolves Granato of anything, but I think it's going to be very telling if they're flat and end up just getting outplayed by the Oilers. So, I mean, we'll see. I'm not going to go as far as you to make a prediction on the game. I don't think I want to do that to myself right now. I need them to come out of the gate strong. They have to. They have to get off to a hot start, and they need to play a full 60 minutes. There cannot be any 20 minutes that they take off in this one. They need to play a complete game. This is, again, it happens game to game, like after a loss, I feel like, or even after a couple of wins or any divisional matchups. Like, just at this stage of the season, each subsequent game is the most important game of the season. And Thursday night's game is the most important game of the season to date. They need to win. They need to win their next few in a row, again, to even seriously be in this conversation. And how we look at this full 60 minutes is, again, going to be very telling about where this team is at. Like, when we talk on Sunday, because it's either going to be, all right, you know what, they did what they had to do, they got the job done, and they're hanging around this for a little bit longer. Or if they lose, we don't have to talk about the playoffs anymore for the rest of the episode, the rest of this season of our show.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. I think if they win tonight, that'd be huge. I mean, it would, because, like, as we've said, the rest of these fellas in the East are not really making a serious run at making the playoffs. So that's, it just doesn't seem like it's going to happen. Like, it doesn't seem like anyone's going to run away with it. Mm-hmm. So tonight, the Islanders and Red Wings play. If that's not a 3-point game, that's great news for the Sabres. Jets and Devils play. I don't know how much that matters. I guess it matters a little bit. And then you also have, well, that's you have the Lightning. I don't know if that really matters. And also they're playing the Sharks, so it doesn't matter. You have the Flyers playing the Hurricanes. That's not nothing anymore. So you have like a couple of these matchups. If everything goes right and it does seem like, oh, that was a good night for them, maybe they're not 100% out, there's still the tiny sliver of hope. Sunday becomes big. A Sunday 9 p.m. game against the Flames. Mm. We might talk before then. I don't know. We'll see how things are going.
Yeah.
But God, that is that's troublesome. I know, as much as we want to think the Flames suck, they have the same point total as the Sabres right now in fewer games played. And they did sell at the deadline. So I guess you would be forgiven for thinking that the Sabres should be favored even on opposing ice. And they might be, but this would be a game, because the Flames, and God, if they weren't, for example, starting Jacob Markstrom in this game, if we got to see Wolf or Vladar, that'd be fantastic. Although that doesn't seem to matter most of the time for the Sabres.
True.
But man, Brendan, would you like to hear my fun stat for the Flames?
Oh, I love fun Calgary Flames stats, so I would love nothing more. Lay it on me.
2 years ago, Jonathan Huberdeau had 85 assists in 80 games. Subsequently traded to the Flames, where he's had 74 assists in 146 games. So, good chance it takes double the time for him to reach 85 assists this time. In fact, it's almost guaranteed.
Oof.
Yeah, the Flames, for the listeners who don't pay attention to Calgary Flames, so I'm guessing all of you, they've had an interesting couple of years. They were the one seed in the West 2 years ago. One of the most forgotten things of this little era is the Flames were the one seed in the West twice and did not make the conference finals either time. One time they were overshadowed. It was 2019. The other 1-8 matchup, you might remember, mm-hmm. It was Tampa Bay tying the wins record and getting swept by Columbus. Well, what's going on in the West doesn't sound as surprising in hindsight, but the Colorado Avalanche, who were the 8th seed, beat the Flames. And honestly, they were better than them.
Yeah.
That's a weird NHL thing. I don't know how that was like the one versus second wild card. Anyway, the Flames last year they missed the playoffs after being the one seed. A lot of weird circumstances last year. Jacob Markstrom was suddenly terrible. They lost Johnny Gaudreau in free agency and traded Matthew Tkachuk for Huberdeau. All of a sudden, Huberdeau had less than half the points he had. Year prior, they signed Nazem Kadri. And boy, they have been bleeding guys ever since. Just this season, they have traded they also traded Tyler Toffoli last year. I want to leave that one out. That was a big one. This year, they've traded Nikita Zadorov, Kuzmenko, Chris Tanev, Noah Hanifin, and Elias Lindholm. So quite a few guys. Everyone expects them to trade Jacob Markstrom in the offseason. And that kind of leaves their core as a kind of weird, like, veterans, guys going for it now, but non-stars, or guys are kind of on the downside, but not terrible yet. So Nazem Kadri.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit overpaid. Blake Coleman. Wow, 51 points this year for Blake Coleman. Good for him. Sharon Govich, 50 points this year. Huberto, huge disappointment. They signed him to a huge extension. 9 goals and 43 total points this year. You also have Mackenzie Weegar and Andrew Mangiapane and Michael Backlund. I would call that their core, really.
Rasmus Anderson, too. Did you say
him? Rasmus Anderson's a good example, too. All guys that probably won't be there. Not all guys, but a lot of guys that will not be there in the next couple of years.
Many of them, yeah. If not all. I feel like that's even a possibility that they all could be gone.
Yeah, but probably not Huberdeau.
Yeah, that contract, you're not getting any help there.
Yeah. Oof, terrible, terrible trade, terrible contract. Brendan, the Sabres are better than this team is currently constituted, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I would say so.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
It's the Flames. Like, I don't – they're not a team at their current iteration that I take seriously, really. Sunday should be – I don't want to go as far to say, like, an easy win, but, like, that is a game that is – you need to win. And if you don't win, it further proves how unserious they are.
Absolutely, especially if they do win on Thursday.
Yeah.
That becomes a must-win, and it's very winnable. Unfortunately, I kind of see a, like, 4-3 loss to the Oilers, 3-1 win over the Flames coming.
I like that. I'm going to hold you to that. I think that might actually happen.
That'd be bad, though. I mean, they need to win all these games.
I know. I agree. I feel like I could see that coming.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, the Flames, at least I'm sure, I'm not checking right now, but they probably got fair value in all the trades they made and all those important pieces they lost from the last 2 years.
Oh, sure, definitely.
Craig Conroy did a great job.
Yep, they handled the Johnny Gaudreau situation really well. Definitely maximized their return for Matthew Tkachuk. Yeah.
Now that I'm thinking about it, was Craig Conroy there the whole time, or was that also our current Toronto Maple Leafs GM that handled the
Johnny I believe Gaudreau? It was him. Yeah, it was traveling. Travelling? Yeah, it was traveling. That was not Craig Conroy.
Mm. Craig Conroy, innocent, except of all those trades where he got 70 cents on the dollar this year.
Hate to see it, Craig. Can you trust a guy named Craig?
Oh, I got a cousin named Craig, and he's in the news in Omaha, so I think the people out there trust him.
Okay, then good. I stand corrected. Craig Patrick, assistant coach of the Miracle on Ice team.
Yeah.
I know nothing else about that guy other than that, so he could have some...
He worked for the Sabres.
Well, see?
Yeah, like a couple of years ago. He might still be employed. He probably not still employed. They hired him as an advisor in the early Tim Murray era. But he's like an 80-year-old man or something now, isn't he?
Trustworthy.
Yeah, probably. He also, wasn't he the GM of the Penguins when they won their first two cups?
Was he? Huh. All right.
Yeah, I think he's the guy that has like the best year in hockey history for a GM. I
Wow.
think he acquired five Hall of Famers within 1 year. Not one season, but like one calendar year.
Jesus.
Yeah, like drafting Jágr, maybe Mark Recchi, Brian Trottier, Tom Barrasso. I don't know, I'd have to look at it. But
Yeah, I want to actually, we should look that up. Anyways, though, Taylor, should we talk about the big hire that the Sabres and Bills had this week?
oh, yeah.
All right, folks. Well, as you may have seen, the Bills and the Sabres jointly announced that they hired Pete Guelli as the chief operating officer of each of the respective teams. In his role as COO, according to the Sabres website, Guelli will oversee the business operations of both the Bills and Sabres. So, just to give a little bit of background, Guelli is a Rochester native and he is joining the Sabres after a 5-year stint as the chief business officer of the New York Giants. He joined the Giants in 2019 and was recruited to modernize the team's business model and operations. During his tenure with the Giants, he has restructured key business functions, established a business intelligence and analytics department, built out the team's digital capabilities, launched team branding initiatives, implemented a new customer service function, and extended the team's partnership with Ticketmaster. Guelli also led efforts to assign Eli Manning to a comprehensive role within the organization, and he also currently is serving on the NFL team president's business optimization committee. Prior to joining the Giants in 2019, Guelli served as chief operating officer of the Charlotte Hornets after originally joining the franchise as EVP, chief marketing and sales officer in 2009. In Charlotte, he led the transition of team ownership to Michael Jordan when MJ became the first former player to become a majority owner of an NBA team. He spearheaded the organization's transition from the Bobcats back to the historic Hornets brand in 2014. He also led the efforts to secure a new television rights deal. He oversaw the launch of the team's G League team, led the team's participation in the NBA Global Games in China, expanded the team's relationship with Live Nation, and managed the renovation of the Spectrum Center and directed a successful bid to host the NBA All-Star Game in 2019. Guelli also served as president of the Hornets Foundation, focused on community investment in Charlotte. That all coming from the Sabres website. And as a quick sidebar, I'm not trying to rag anybody, but that press release is riddled with grammatical errors and punctuation errors. Good Lord. Oh my God. God damn, have we ever heard of an apostrophe, folks? Do we know possessive nouns? Maybe. Good God. All right. Anyways, though, back to this, though. Obviously, this is all pretty good stuff. You look at the Hornets and the Giants, and of course, as we're talking about the on-field product and on-court product, not exactly what you would like to see from those teams, but that's not what Guelli was hired to do there, and it's not what he's hired to do here. And I think a lot of what I liked about learning about his background a bit is that it does seem like he understands a key thing that I think that the Sabres organization has been lacking, which is engaging with like star athletes and alumni and making them kind of a part of the team is ultimately a positive. I think also you look at just a lot of what we're talking about here is just, I think, modernizing operations for both organizations and making some pretty substantial improvements to operations within both of those teams. And I also like the fact that he was able to, his resume is not just focused in one sport. Like, obviously, for the Bills, it's great that he has this background with the Giants, but I also kind of really like the fact that he comes from an NBA background a little bit, because I think one of the things that you and I have really talked a lot about in terms of with both teams is looking at other leagues and what they do well, what other teams from other leagues do well, and implementing those things to the given sport. So, taking some good things from, like, let's say, one of the things we talked about in terms of the Sabres with updating their operations, and like the arena experiences, looking at like NBA games and how fun those are, and how interactive that can those can be. And the same thing goes for like the NFL. you know, and just looking at, okay, well, this worked with the Hornets or this worked with the Giants. How can we maybe implement this to the Bills or the Sabres? Or on the inverse of that, this didn't work, so let's steer clear of this. Or this didn't work for us. This is something you're doing now. Let's get us on the right path and do something that actually does work and leads us to, you know, promising solutions here. So what are your thoughts on the hire, Taylor? I mean, I got to be honest with you. I didn't really know about this guy very much prior to the announcement, but after reading up on him a little bit, it seems like this is a pretty good hire of a guy who comes pretty highly regarded.
Yeah, I think it's interesting at the very least that they hired a COO for both teams to be the same guy, considering they seem to want to break that up. The PSC type stuff, that there was not going to be one Buffalo anymore, that the Bills and the Sabres are going to be separate entities. So it's definitely interesting that this guy is a COO of both. I don't mind that at all. But yeah, I think that's a good point. Like, you can't focus on the field stuff because there's nothing to do with that. Like, there needs to be another, business-wise, at the very least, another adult in the room, especially when it comes to the Sabres. And it actually, I think this movie is really, it generally is more important when it comes to the Sabres, because the NFL, you can make money being asleep. Even the Bills, who are one of the smaller market teams, you make so much more money than you could possibly know what to do with any year, just because of how much TV money. And the NFL is only making more money. So you make out incredibly with that, and then the Bills are having the new stadium. I mean, that's certainly something to consider his importance in that. But really, I think the importance here is you can lose money as an NHL team. So I don't think Terry Pegula is particularly interested in running at a loss. So I think it's worth keeping in mind that the Sabres' health, financial health, is directly tied to the best word is innovation or ingenuity that a smart business person would bring. And doing the kind of things you're talking about, engaging the fans, making it a better in-arena experience. And then also, other things that can help with revenue is bringing in those big type of events that we get. I mean, Buffalo's had them. We're probably not going to have the All-Star game in the NHL, but other big events over the years that are moderately big events that get people in the arena, get people to travel here, that are good also for the revenue of, you know, owning the arena and all that, that, you know, make it a little bit maybe more tolerable if the Sabres are losing a little bit of money, or if, you know, just giving you that Pegula and that more confidence and peace of mind in spending money. And that's kind of the background it seems like he has in dealing with those things. So that's good. Generally good to hear all that stuff. It's been kind of a revolving door in terms of top business people for both the Bills and Sabres in recent years for a lot of years. So hopefully this brings some stability.
Yeah, I sure hope so. I mean, I think it's just always a good thing, you know, for how much we've talked about these internal hires, cutting corners, promoting from within, and really not being open to opposing perspectives. I think that this is another thing that's really great. Obviously, he has local ties being from Rochester, but I just appreciate, again, like, I guess tying in with the fact that he has worked in different sports, that just it is a different perspective. It's a fresh voice. It's somebody new. And I am a little bit interested to see how this is going to work with, like you had mentioned before, him acting as COO for both organizations. Let's talk about that a little bit further, Taylor. I mean, do you think that that is something that the Sabres need to be and the Bills need to be legitimately concerned about, like in terms of like spreading himself too thin between running two major sports organizations like that when most teams just have one dedicated person to this job?
I don't know, to be honest. I don't know enough about the job to know if that's a problem. I think, I don't know. It's like I said, though, it's weird to me that they're doing that after they specifically didn't. Like, they specifically said that the PSC was broken up, that these are going to be two separate entities. Still, though, I honestly have no idea. I don't, like, it's been done in the past. I don't know if it's been done successfully. But I don't know. If the guy took the job, maybe he's ready to do it.
Yeah.
And like I said, God, I don't know. There's a lot that goes into the NFL, obviously. I know it's a big, important league, but are you stressing a lot if you're an NFL business type job? Like, oh, damn, how are we going to pay the electric bill this month? I'm joking, obviously, but like, and it's a lot of work, but, and they do happen to, it's pretty, not complete overlap, but similarly overlap seasons. But I don't know. It's hard for me to say.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, I'm going into it with giving him the benefit of the doubt. And I think obviously, you know, the season is just about done and wrapping up. And so his focus, I'm sure, is going to be solely on next year for both the Bills and Sabres. So come the fall, it'll be interesting to see what kind of changes are being integrated and really seeing how he's able to, you know, leave his mark on both teams across pretty much every area that he's going to be touching here. Hopefully, you know, this is kind of what both of the organizations need to just, again, get a fresh voice in there, get a little bit more stability in positions that have clearly, for a few different reasons, have had a lot of turnover. So, yeah, I mean, I guess it's, you know, not a bad thing to approach it with a bit of optimism. You know, this is a very accomplished guy, and it feels like he's going to be well-suited for the roles.
Yeah, hopefully.
Taylor, do you have any other thoughts you'd like to share before we sign off for today?
The ball is tipped.
Oh, do you need to see a doctor? Exciting stuff. Who do you have, Taylor? Who's coming out on top?
I have four brackets. I have all different kinds of agendas.
Wow, look at this.
And I also have a recommendation.
Oh, what do you got?
From Dusk Till Dawn, which I just saw for the first time. 90s classic. I don't know if classic is the right word. A Tarantino script directed by Robert Rodriguez.
Mm-hmm.
George Clooney before he was famous. Juliette Lewis when she was probably as famous as George Clooney. A lot of Harvey Keitel as a father and former pastor. Really fun movie. I recommend it if you're going to watch it. Two things. First of all, if you're the kind of person that can handle all kinds of upsetting stuff in movies, gore, violence, all that kind of stuff, upsetting general crime and bad people, if you're fine with that, you still like to have fun, watch it. Do not read anything about it. Do not watch any trailers. Just watch it.
Okay.
It pays off.
Folks, you heard it here first. Let's go. All right, I'll give a song recommendation. Not anything new, but a throwback. I've been listening to a lot of Etta James lately, Taylor. I don't know if you've ever taken a deep dive. I know it's a little different from some of my other recommendations that I usually give out, but I've been really enjoying a lot of classics in that regard. Etta James, Sam Cooke, I've listened to quite a bit these days. So I'm going to go with Stormy Weather by Etta James. I feel like over this past, this pretty much like the past year, but like I've been really listening to her for the past few months, like quite a bit. I'm coming around to the fact that I think that she is, I don't know if I want to say my favorite or in my opinion, the best like female vocalist ever. But man, you just go back and listen to some of her earlier stuff and it is just absolutely incredible. So I'm going to go with, again, Stormy Weather from the album At Last. Highly, highly recommend. Give it a listen. It's a pretty common one. 1959. It is a pretty incredible vocal performance. So Stormy Weather by Etta James is going to be my song recommendation of the day. Anything else, Taylor, before we sign off until Monday?
Nope.
Wonderful. Well, everybody, thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of Straight Up Sabres presented by the Hockey Podcast Network and the Charging Buffalo. Make sure you're checking out both the presenters of this podcast on their respective websites. Whatever streaming platform you're currently using to listen to this episode, make sure you're checking out all of our fellow shows. And make sure you are also following the Charging Buffalo and the Hockey Podcast Network on social media, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, where you can also find us, Straight Up Sabres. And before you close out of this app, whatever you're using to listen to this episode of the pod, make sure you're either following or subscribed to us and leave us a nice rating or review, as we would very much appreciate it. Last but not least, we have our sponsor, folks, and we love them so, so much. That would be DraftKings Sportsbook. Make sure you use that promo code THPN at checkout to take advantage of great deals. We, again, will be back with a brand new episode on Monday. Thank you all so much for tuning in. This has been Straight Up Sabres. Room floor.